I was so excited about our teachers, I overlooked the mic. We already talked about this one song we sung, "I'd Rather Have Jesus Than Fame or Gold." And it talked about a couple different comparisons of things that people can pursue. And that song would have fit very well with the story we want to look at this morning. We're going to take a look at an Old Testament story that we're all very familiar with. So go ahead and turn to 2 Kings chapter 5. Verse 1. 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 1. And this is the familiar account of Naaman. And as far as I know, this is the first time we read about Naaman. He didn't surface up until this time here. So we're going to go ahead and read the first 19 verses of this account in 1 Kings 5, 1 to 19. And then we're going to draw out some lessons here from Naaman's life. So go ahead and, if you're physically able to stand for the reading here, go ahead and do that at this time. And we'll read the first 19 verses. "Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, 'Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy.' And one went in and told his lord, saying, 'Thus and thus said the maid, that is of the land of Israel.' And the king of Syria said, 'Go to, go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel.' And then he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, 'Now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman, my servant, to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy.' And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, 'Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man descend unto me to recover a man of leprosy? Wherefore, consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me.' And it was so, when Elisha the man of God had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, 'Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel.' So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot, and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, 'Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean.' But Naaman was wroth, and he went away and said, 'Behold, I thought, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over this place and recover the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean?' So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, 'My father, if the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, wouldst thou not have done it? How much rather then, when he saith to thee, wash and be clean?' Then went he down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And he returned to the man of God and all his company, and came and stood before him. And he said, 'Behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant.' And he said, 'As the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none.' And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, "Shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant 2 mules burden of earth? For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. In this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing." And he said unto him, "Go in peace." And so he departed from him a little way. And we're going to stop in the story right there. You can be seated. So verse 1 introduces the man Naaman. And it goes down through and it lists out, and I have 7 things here in this one verse alone that we learn about Naaman. So I want to just quick go down through those. So the first thing is here, it says he's a captain of the army. All right, so we have a man of rank. This man had a position. And in biblical times and even in certain countries in around the world today, titles mean more than they do in the United States. And titles still mean some things, but titles even meant more back then. There was a certain amount of respect that a man would get that had a title like this. So he was used to people bowing down to him. The second one was, it says that he was a great man with his master. The king we see in this story was willing to go to bat for him to try to get him healed. He was willing to write a letter and send stuff over to Israel. He had connections at the top of the ladder. He worked for the king, and he was a man that was great. It says here that he was a man of honor, or he was honorable. So I think the man was a man of good character. He was respected, a man that was thought of well in the community. Then it says, the fourth one, because of him, the Lord gave the Syrians a win. So this man actually had some trophies, some battle accomplishments. It was because of him that the Lord saw favorable that the Syrians won a war against Israel. So he was an accomplished man. He wasn't just any army captain. He's one that actually had some things, some bragging rights. The fifth one, it says he was mighty in valor. I don't know how many of you young guys have ever been told you're mighty in valor. But I think he had courage. He was not a wimp. He was strong. I don't think he went to many tea parties. He was a man of war. He was a man that had access to wealth and assets. And that you don't see that in this first verse, but twice in this story, he used money and possessions to try to accomplish something. He had it at his disposal. Not everyone could do that. Not everybody could just come with gifts and things ahead of him. But he had things at his fingertips. And then the last one is at the very end of verse 7. I'm sorry, end of verse 1. The 7th thing I have here is, but he was a leper. So that's the last thing in this row of things in verse 1, and it kind of drops that at the end, but he was a leper. So this man had 6 things and probably more. This verse probably didn't capture everything that was going for him. Things that were going for him, things that people in that time only dreamed of, but he was a leper. And then in the next couple verses here, Naaman is faced with this opportunity that he has to be cured of his leprosy. So there's a little bit of hope that he has of getting healed. And I can only imagine he was desperate, right? You know, his life was going for him. He had people that worked under him. He had servants. He had accomplishments. And then there was leprosy on top of it. I'm sure he was, the thought of getting healed of that, his life would be so much more complete. And it could take that thorn out of his flesh. So I want to take a look at what unfolded then in the next couple verses here when he was made aware that maybe he could get healed. So we're going to look at starting in verse 2 then until he gets healed. Now, I wouldn't say Naaman was the most proudest, arrogant man. I think there's examples in Scripture of men that were much more arrogant. But for whatever reason, God decided not to just heal him. You know, there's events in Scripture, Old Testament, New Testament, where God's journey to physically heal someone looked dramatically different. Sometimes it was instant. He chose not to do that with Naaman. And it seemed like there was a series of events that led up to this healing, that God wanted to take Naaman on a journey. And you know, throughout these tests, Naaman at any time could have taken an off-ramp. He wouldn't have had to keep going through with it because, you know what, this isn't, I'll just stick with leprosy. So I want to look at eight tests, and I call them humility tests that he faced. Sorry, I'm just going to fix this a little here. Eight humility tests that Naaman faced in the process of finding healing in this story. All right, so the first one is in verse 1, and that is the fact that he was a leper. And I think that oftentimes when we read Bible stories and we want to make them practical, it's always, sometimes it's tough for us to get the culture and maybe what a disease like this could have meant. Today, and someone gets a serious something like cancer, we rally around them. Well, in the thing of leprosy, there was a stigma with leprosy. In some cases, it was a judgment for sin. He was considered unclean. Oftentimes, it carried shame for the family. And you know, I don't know if you've ever met somebody that had lots of money and things, but they had a sickness they could do nothing about. It's a very hopeless thing. You know, I had to think of Steve Jobs, one of the wealthiest men that ever lived in the world. He died of cancer. There was really nothing at the end of his life as he looked back and reflect of what he accomplished. He really, his health was not something he could buy. And that's what we see here. We see a man that was, Naaman had it going for him, but he had this leprosy issue. You know, he had something that his credentials really could do nothing about. And I'm sure that was humbling for him. The second one, the humility test he faced, was that there was a solution, and that solution came from his wife's maid. And it was his wife's maid that they had taken from the country of Israel, or from the Israelites, and she had a suggestion of how he could get healed, the God of the Israelites. A few years ago, I was putting a bed together. And it was a bed that we bought from a next-door neighbor, and we had looked at it there. Our neighbor man was a craftsman. He built it, and it was a unique bed, and his children had all left home. He wondered if we wanted it. So we took it apart, and I was assembling, putting it together there in Landon's bedroom, and there was this one brace I was having a little trouble with. I was trying to fit it in here, and it was not cooperating, and Landon's like, hey, Dad, you actually turn it this way. And so I did that, and he was exactly right. It was exactly how the piece went together. And so there I was as a dad, you know, slightly frustrated as I was doing this. And my eight-year-old was more in tune with how this thing went together than I was. And, you know, dads, we've all faced that. And there's that little humbling moment where, you know what, Dad doesn't have all the answers. And I think in this moment with Naaman, it was much more humbling than that. And the culture there, his wife's maid, he may not have even had any daily contact with this girl. She probably lived in a different part of the house. She was a servant. She had no business hanging out with Naaman. She was honestly really nothing in Naaman's eyes. I'm sure he was thankful for what she did around the house. But she had a solution. And Naaman was faced with a decision now. I can either humble myself and hear what this little girl has to say, or I can ignore it. So he chose to humble himself and hear what she had to say. And she suggested that he goes back to Israel, and their God, the God of the prophet of Israel, could probably heal him. So humility test number 3 was when apparently he must have went to the king of Syria, and they drafted up a letter, and they sent it over to Israel, and accompanied with silver and other things. They kind of send this out as a package. And the king of Israel looks at this and he rents his clothes. And one thing he said, he's like, you know, am I God that I can do this? One commentator said that, you know, this was a rival country. You know, is this a trap? Is this more of a, you know, are they going to try to, you know, kill us on top of this? And the king just got, he didn't go for it. And here again, you know, we don't see a lot of the inner working, but, you know, they had the way that an official thought is, we're going to go to the official of that land, and this is how I'm going to get healed. But they didn't go for that. Instead, Elisha hears wind of this, and he says, sure, come on over. So it wasn't going to be dealing with the king. Now we're dealing with the prophet. And that goes to humility test number 4. And that was the cold, sterile reception that this prophet gave him when he showed up. So Elisha, he was on the, you know, just came off of a couple miracles there that you can read about in Kings. He knew God can heal him. He had the answers, and tells them to come. So they come, servants, Naaman, gifts. They come as a little entourage, and they come rolling in there. And Elisha doesn't even do the courtesy to go out and meet him. It says he sent a servant out to go and give him the message. And I don't think it was because he was a leper, because obviously the messenger went out there. They could have kept a little distance away. But for whatever reason, Elisha, he sends a messenger with the message. And here again, we don't see for sure how he felt about that, but we see things are building up. And I'm sure here again, you know, I'm sure he's having to question, you know, I'm going to a strange land. This maid had this suggestion. I'm not even respected enough to come out and, you know, tell me how I'm going to get healed. And then humility test number 5 comes with the message, and that is go dip 7 times in the Jordan. And I think this was the last straw. You know, all along, I'm sure there was some question in his mind. You know, what am I doing? Heading over here. And now I think he thought, you know, is this a full-blown scam? Jordan was a nasty river. You know, he calls out, what about these other rivers? And it says, in he was wroth. And he says, you know, couldn't Elisha just come out, call on God, and I'd be saved? I mean, couldn't this just be a simple, you know, healing process here for me? And then it says that he left, and he went away in a rage. And if he was in a rage, he was furious at this point. And up until this point, he's like, here I had faith to come over here to get healed. What for joke is this? I'm being disrespected. And so he storms off. He's mad now. And then we come to humility test number 6. Now, I don't know how much time, if this was same day, next day, doesn't really say that how long there, but I picture fairly soon there, a couple of his servants come up to him and they're like, man, you know, here we are. If he would have asked you to do something great, you probably would have done that. I mean, after all, he just wants you to wash, and you're clean, you're good to go. So they reason. Here again, you have a servant, somebody that reports to Naaman, coming and giving a suggestion. You know, Naaman could have slapped them men in the face and said, get back in the chariot. Seriously, guys? He would have had the right to do that. So he had this test. Am I going to humble myself and hear men that they're my servants and they're reasoning with me to go back and listen to what this prophet said? And here again, and you know, I think up until this point, you know, here again, this looks so different than what he first pictured of being healed. But he chose to go through with it. And so he goes to the river, he goes through with it, and he was healed miraculously. Humility test 7 was what, after he was healed, he humbled himself, acknowledged that this was God. It was the God of Israel. It wasn't him. It wasn't Elisha. He came right out and said, truly, this is the God of Israel that healed me here. And then one final humility test that I see here is he was so grateful. He comes to Elisha and he's like, wow, at least take this gift. I have money along. I've got things here. Would you take it? And I'm sure, you know, in politics they use the phrase, an old senator that couldn't be bought. And what that means is in politics, you have somebody that they're not going to take a bribe. They'll stand up for what's right. They're not going to take money under the table. And you know, Elisha, he looked at this and he said, no, you know, that's not for me. I'm not taking payment for doing God's work. And here again, you know, he had to realize I'm a wealthy man in a foreign land. I got healed and he won't even take a thank you. Not even the thank you that I came. It was the least I could do is at least give him money. And Elisha refused it. By now we have a humble and broken man. This healing journey didn't go the way he thought. But along the way, Naaman continued to humble himself. And they departed in peace. And the story continues a little there with Elisha's servant coming back and taking some of those gifts. And then he actually got the leprosy that Naaman had. But that's for a different time. We're going to stop at the story at that point. But I want to go back to the beginning of the story there. You know, Naaman did not know God. He did not know the God of Israel. He was from Syria. And while he had everything going for him, there's that one phrase at the end of verse 1, but he was a leper. You know, if he didn't have that leprosy in his life, I guarantee you he wouldn't have went down that process of learning to know God, right? Leprosy was what drove him on a journey to get healed. The story would have ended differently if he was just a great captain that was wealthy. But he was a leper. It was the thorn in his flesh. It was what drove him to desperate times. And you know, God will often put something in our life to arrest our attention. Things can be going well, but something in our life. So my title of my message here this morning is, But He Was a Leper. You know, it was that that drove him on a journey to a foreign country to seek a foreign God, a God he didn't know. It was that thing, that leprosy that drove him to listen to what a servant, a slave, had to say. And it was that thing that drove him to humble himself all those times to find healing. A question for us here this morning, do I know what God has put in my life that is the leprosy in my life? Do I know what God has put, Brad, this and this and this, but this? Earl, this and this and this, but this? You know, Bill, here's my life, but there's this thing. Or am I trying to ignore it? Do I try to shut it out? Maybe I'm bitter at this point. And I don't even want to look at that thing. Maybe I'm too proud to acknowledge what that leprosy is or what it looks like in my life. There's five things that I saw that Naaman gave up in order to get healed. Things that he had to his name. And we talked about them right at the beginning there, things from verse 1. And as I looked at those things, honestly, when you think of thousands of years later here at Joy, those things still face every one of us here. So I want to take a look at those things. Each one are things that Naaman had to give up and sacrifice and humble himself in order to be healed. And this was physical healing, but you know, healing is a broad term. It can be spiritual healing, sin, strongholds, relationships breaking down, whatever that thing is. So I want to look at five things here, and again, they come out of, pretty much all of them come out of verse 1, and just think a little bit how that applies to us this morning here at Joy. So the first one was his title and his status. So he was the captain of the army. And title and status, you know, it's not always what we think. Obviously, we think of the, you know, you got pastor and school board chairman and president of the business and all those lofty titles. But you know, it can really be anything, any identity that gets in the way of my identity with Christ, or any identity that I hold on to and put any kind of stake in. It can be family identity. It can be position in a church, a business. Sometimes you can have an entire community that has an identity of who they think they are. It could be an entire church that has an identity of who they think they are. It can be an air of a status there. You know, Naaman had to lay all that down. When he started this healing journey, if he would have said, you know, I'm the captain, this is how it goes, I command thousands of men, and this is how I'm going to get healed, he wouldn't have got healed. Is my identity holding back who I think I am? Is it holding me back for true healing in my life? The second one, success and accomplishment. You know, he won a lot. He did some things. He had some victories to talk about. He went places in life. And it's easy to focus on big successes in life, but you know, sometimes I find myself wanting to hold subconsciously to some pretty silly things sometimes that I think I've done. Maybe it's spiritual accomplishments. You know, no, we would never boast about a business accomplishment but maybe we think we're spiritually superior. I've never fell into that type of sin. Man, I can't see how so-and-so does that. And we actually think we've arrived. We actually think we have merit with Christ because of our spiritual status or some platform to stand on. That can hold us back from healing of what God, that leprosy that God has in our life. Then there was wealth and possessions. Twice in this story, when they first went to Israel, they sent money and gold along. And then at the very end, he's like, here, Elisha, take some money. You know, he had stuff. He had things. I recently sold a man a generator, and I was at his home, and I had met his electrician there, and we walked around his home there. And he had made it in life financially. Beautiful home, beautiful community. Not just anyone would live in that community that he was in. And we had a solution for him, but he had one problem, and that was he just was not willing to wait till we could get him in the schedule. We're booked out right now, and he'd have to wait a few months. And he was just, I could tell this was bothering him, and I was out in the parking lot with his electrician after he went in the house, and he's like, you know, he said, Brad, he said, you know, Bob is used to getting what he wants when he wants. He's got a lot of money. And, you know, I had to think about that. You know, in America, there's a concept of money that it should get me what I want. It should get me the friends I want. It should get me the status. We don't look very highly on bribing in America, even though it, you know, happens. But in some countries, bribing is alive and well, and it's a part of just surviving. When we were in India waiting on Landon's passport, we were there for weeks, just nothing was happening. And a couple people suggested that we bribe, and we'd probably get this thing. We'd be on an airplane in no time. And I said something to our agency in the States here, and they're a Christian organization. They're like, absolutely not. They said, why would you stoop to that as a Christian? You know, you're going to be the one to say, you know, thank God I'm from a good heritage and have the answers, but then you want to buy right into that system? And I was, yeah, that's true. And, you know, money in certain things should be able to get you what you want in certain places. And in this story here, it didn't. He had to give that up. Money was off the table. Elisha wasn't even willing to come out and say good morning to him. He had to go dip in the Jordan. Is my stuff in the way of my healing? Is my money, the things I have around me? The fourth one I have is control. You know, Naaman wanted to control what this healing process looked like. He wanted to control the outcome. He wanted to control what the healing journey looked like. Why wouldn't he? The quickest and pain-free as possible. And while he was willing to stoop to go over to Israel, you know, he still had some things. He's like, you know, can't Elisha just come out and cry down from heaven and wave his hands and we just get this over with? But he had to give that up. He had to give up what he thought this is going to look like. You know, Elisha, and then even at the end, he couldn't even control how he could thank Elisha. You know, God, throughout his journey on this, however much time this took from when he first realized there's a God in Israel to he got healed, I don't know if that was months, but God tweaked that vision of what he thought. He had a mind picture, we all would, of what this is going to look like, but God kept changing it, kept humbling him. It's not going to happen the way he thought. You know, sometimes, in that one instance there, he stumped out, he said, in a rage. And, you know, a common thing when I want to control, and I want to control a circumstance, and it's not going the way, it's often that we as humans resort to anger. That's a common emotion. When I'm trying to control, and the tighter I squeeze, and the more it's not going my way, it can make us angry. And it's a sign that we're trying to be in control. You know, you'll say, you know, that person's a control freak. And basically, they're saying they're trying to control everything. You know, sometimes I think when my life feels like it's out of control and I'm angry about that, I need to step back and say, am I actually the one that's supposed to be in control of this circumstance? Is me trying to control the outcome of this healing the actual reason why I'm not being healed? The fifth one that I see here is his pride in his image. Finally, the day of healing, I picture a man very humbly taking off his outer garment, kicking his sandals off, and he's getting ready to go in the Jordan River. And I think here again, our American upbringing, we don't always think of maybe quite what that meant, the stigma, the social stigma of what he was about to do. We grew up, we liked going swimming in muddy rivers and ponds. This wasn't a normal thing for a commander while his servant stood there watching and holding his coat while he got ready to dive in. And I'm sure he was just angry a little bit ago about the whole thing. I'm sure there was a thing he's like, I'm giving up my entire ego, my entire identity to go through with this. But at the end, he was healed. You know, pride and our image can keep us from admitting failure, failure of sin, failure in life. Pride can keep us from admitting that we need others in our life, that I need this brother or this sister in my life. You know, Naaman, again and again, as God took him down this road, he was willing to hear advice from others. It started with hearing advice from this little girl, and that was humbling. Later his servants and Elisha. And he continued to humble himself, to take advice from people that he didn't have to in life. And you know, our pride in our identity, it's different for any age you're in. You know, from young people, it could be, you know, my peers and who I want to be with or the vehicle I really wish I had or whatever. You know, my age, you know, we want to have this perception that I'm successful in life and I'm going somewhere, from the house I have to the car I have. Or maybe it's my children. I want them to be the stars at school. You know, older, grandpa's here. You know, I'm not at that stage. But, you know, I've seen people in your stage that it's tough when a child doesn't follow through the way that you taught them. And maybe it's not living in sin or outright rebellion, but maybe just making a different life choice that you wouldn't have been comfortable with. And there's that element of, you know, it's my family image. My children aren't doing what I would have spelled out. And there's that thing of, it can be hard on our pride. And God takes us on those practical, simple journeys of breaking down who we thought we were. And God has many ways of humbling us. Am I willing to give up my image, my pride, in order for God to speak in and be part of that healing journey? Well, in conclusion here, you know, at the end of the day, Naaman was healed. At the end of this story, Naaman kept going through with it. And he worshiped the true God, not the idols from Syria. He worshiped the true God of Israel. And there were different stages I'm sure he was about to give up. I'm sure when the muddy river suggestion came out and he stormed out in a rage, that chariot was probably, it was close to heading back to Syria. But he humbled himself and went back. Have I identified what the leprosy is in my life? What has God put in my life that is something that God wants me to go through and go through a healing journey to take care of in my life? And as God takes me down that road, am I willing to see these roadblocks, these things, and allow them to humble me? It wasn't a couple weeks ago, Aaron mentioned in one of our meetings there, he just said that one time he was, I think, at a youth Bible school, and he told this whole audience of youth that one of the greatest things you can do for yourself as a young person is to live a surrender life and to live a life that's open for input and live a life with open hands, a surrendered life. And I had to think about that, and that's a whole other message in and of itself, but it ties into this. Am I willing just to be surrendered and let God work and let him heal in my life? And healing will look different. The things that we need healed of look different. For some it is physical, like Naaman. It might be spiritual. Sins that you haven't been able to get victory of for years. A marriage that needs healed. A peer friendship. Someone you haven't talked to and you ignore. And the list goes on. God's healing journey is going to look different for every one of us if we're humble enough to go on that journey with him. God bless you.